Section H, Classical Polarography. Let's turn now to one of the oldest of the electroanalytical techniques, which is still very widely employed, despite the fact that on its surface it may seem like a particularly peculiar way to carry out electrolyses for analytical purposes. I refer to the technique of polarography, invented by Jaroslav Hrabowski at Charles University in Prague in the 1920s. Polarography is the name attached to electrochemical measurements with a cell in which the working electrode is the so-called dropping mercury electrode, originated by Hrabowski. Figure H1 shows a schematic picture of the electrode. It consists of a length of very fine bore capillary tubing attached to a reservoir of mercury that is elevated above the capillary to provide a pressure of about 50 to 100 centimeters of mercury. The pressure exerted by the head of mercury is great enough to cause the mercury to be forced down through the capillary tubing, and it falls from the bottom of the capillary in the form of small spherical drops, hence the name, dropping mercury electrode. The dropping mercury electrode is often called the DME for short, and I shall doubtless resort to this abbreviation on occasion in what follows. Polarographic experiments, then, consist of making measurements with this dropping mercury electrode, either in a two-electrode cell, such as the one shown in figure H2, which was quite popular in the early days of polarography, or the nowadays more common three-electrode variety, in which the auxiliary and reference electrodes are separated. The potential of the dropping mercury electrode is monitored with respect to the reference electrode, such as a saturated Kalman electrode, and the resulting current is measured to obtain current potential curves. Oxygen is usually removed from the solutions by purging them with an inert gas, such as nitrogen or argon, and an atmosphere of inert gas is kept over the solution during the recording of the current potential curve. The cell shown in H2 has inlets and outlets for nitrogen to accomplish this. The sorts of current potential curves one obtains in classical polarography are shown in the next two figures, H3 and H4. H3 is a current potential curve obtained with the dropping mercury electrode in a solution of cadmium ion, and H4 shows the result obtained with a mixture of ions. These curves look similar to the current potential curves we have seen before, except for the fluctuating nature of the current. The reason for the current fluctuations is the fluctuating area of the electrode. When the weight of the growing mercury drop can no longer be sustained by the interfacial tension that holds it to the capillary, it falls and is immediately replaced by the next growing mercury drop, which follows the same pattern. Why is it that this peculiar kind of electrode, in which little drops of mercury fall out of the end of a piece of capillary tubing, has proved so popular and useful ever since Hrabowski described it? There are several answers to this question, some of which are illustrated schematically in figure H5. One virtue of the electrode has to do with the fact that a dropping mercury electrode provides a brand new electrode surface at regular intervals. In a typical operation, the mercury drop falls from the capillary every 4 to 6 seconds, and a new one takes its place, so that the dropping electrode provides an electrode surface that was created no longer than a few seconds ago. This contributes to excellent reproducibility from drop to drop, and more importantly, it eliminates problems with contamination of the surface of the electrode by trace impurities, which are present even in highly purified solutions. Certain types of ubiquitous organic impurities can seriously impede electrode reactions when they are adsorbed on electrode surfaces, and they are a constant source of difficulty when solid electrodes are employed, or even with stationary mercury electrodes, which do not have their surfaces renewed as often as is the case with the dropping mercury electrode. So, a major reason for the popularity of the DME is the automatic generation of a clean, virgin electrode surface which it provides. A related advantage of the electrode is the fact that the solution layer just next to the electrode is also renewed each time a new drop is formed. When a drop falls, it breaks contact with the thread of mercury in the capillary, and as it falls away, it carries with it the thin layer of solution that was being electrolyzed during the lifetime of the drop. So any products of the electrode reaction which might precipitate or hydrolyze or otherwise perturb the solution layer next to the electrode are all removed along with the falling drop, and each new drop is exposed to a fresh portion of the solution. An additional important advantage of the dropping mercury electrode is the fact that mercury metal has a very high hydrogen overvoltage. That is to say, the potential to which the electrode must be adjusted in order for protons or water molecules to be reduced to molecular hydrogen is more negative for a mercury surface than for any other metal. As a result, if aqueous solutions are used to prepare the reactants for study, a wide range of negative potentials is available before interference from reduction of the solvent becomes important. With mercury electrodes, one can go to potentials as negative as -2 volts versus the saturated calomel electrode before a significant reduction of water occurs. With other metals at the same potential, the rate of hydrogen evolution would be much higher, and the resulting currents would interfere with accurate measurements of the currents due to the electrode processes which were of interest. Finally, a significant advantage of mercury electrodes is the fact that many metal atoms, which are formed by the reduction of their corresponding cations, dissolve in mercury to form metal amalgams. This means that when solutions of these cations are electrolyzed with the dropping mercury electrode, the product of the cathodic reduction is a solution of metal atoms in the mercury drop. This is an advantage because the product of the electrode reaction then diffuses into the mercury, away from the electrode-electrolyte interface, and causes no problems in terms of blockage or interference with the continuation of the electrode reaction. Of course, there are also some disadvantages to the dropping mercury electrode. A minor one is the fact that the current does vary during the lifetime of the drop because its area increases continuously, and this makes the accurate measurement of the current somewhat more difficult. But this is not a serious problem. A more major limitation of the dropping mercury electrode is the fact that the mercury is readily oxidized to mercurous or mercuric cations. This means that the electrode is not very suitable for studying oxidative processes, that is, anodic reactions, except with very easily oxidized reactants, because the most positive potential at which a mercury electrode can be used before massive oxidation of the electrode itself occurs is only about +0.3 to +0.4 volts versus the saturated calomel electrode. And this limit becomes even less positive in electrolytes containing anions such as halides, hydroxide, or sulfide, which stabilize mercury 1 or mercury 2 cations. For this reason, polarography is most commonly applied to the investigation of reduction reactions. Because the hydrogen overvoltage on mercury is as large as it is, a solution that contains a number of metal ions can be electrolyzed with the dropping mercury electrode, and the polarographic current potential response corresponding to each of the metal ions detected individually. Figure H4, for example, shows a polarogram recorded with a dropping mercury electrode in a solution containing 5 different metal cations: silver, thallium, cadmium, nickel, and zinc. Note that starting from the most positive potential and moving in the negative direction, 5 separate polarographic steps or waves are obtained, one corresponding to each of the metal ions present. And as we shall see presently, the height of each of these waves, that is, the magnitude of the currents on the potential independent plateaus of the current potential curves, is directly proportional to the concentration of the ion, which is responsible for each wave. The identity of the ion can be established by noting the position on the potential axis where the wave occurs. So a single polarogram, such as that shown in figure H4, provides both a qualitative analysis of the various species present and a quantitative measure of the amount of each species in the solution. In order to make a quantitative correlation between the metal ion concentrations and the magnitude of the currents on the limiting plateaus of current potential curves, such as those in H4, we need to consider the processes that are responsible for the currents attaining a limiting value. And this involves an analysis of the mass transfer process which brings reactants from the solution to the surface of the electrode. Just as we saw for current potential curves at electrodes of constant area, the factor that causes the current at a dropping mercury electrode to become independent of potential is the decrease in the concentration of the reactant, essentially to zero, at the electrode surface. At this point, the current is determined entirely by the rate at which additional reactant can be supplied to the electrode by diffusion. Figure H6 shows the kinds of current potential curves that are obtained with the dropping mercury electrode when its potential is on the diffusion-limited plateau. Note that the current increases with time rather than decreases, which contrasts with all of the other techniques that we've discussed so far. The curves in figure H6 are, in fact, sixth-order parabolas, which means that the current increases with the 1/6 power of time. And the question is, why does the current show this temporal behavior? The equations under figure H6 help to answer that question. The concentration gradient at the surface of the electrode is given by equation H7, where C is the reactant concentration, R is the distance from the surface of the spherical electrode, and K represents a combination of constants. Note that the concentration gradient is proportional to the reciprocal square root of time, just as was true for the planar electrodes of fixed area that we discussed in section D. The area of a spherical electrode formed by mercury flowing out of a capillary at a constant rate, m, is given by equation H8, where K prime is an abbreviation for a group of constants. You'll note that the area of the electrode increases with the 2/3 power of time, and with what by now should be a familiar pattern, we can calculate the net current at such an electrode by multiplying the concentration gradient, which determines the flux of material arriving at the surface of the electrode, by the number of electrons involved in the electrode reaction, the Faraday, and the electrode area. This product is given in equation H9, which shows that the net current will be proportional to the -1/2 + 2/3, that is, to the 1/6 power of time. It is this combination of a decreasing concentration gradient coupled with an increasing electrode area that gives rise to the 1/6 order time dependence of the current at a dropping mercury electrode. Actually, the time dependence of the current at a dropping mercury electrode is less frequently employed in analytical applications of polarography than is the concentration dependence of the limiting current, and the equation giving the concentration dependence of the limiting current, that is, the current on the plateau of the current potential curve, is equation H10, the Ilkovich equation, named for the Czechoslovakian scientist who first solved the mass transfer problem associated with diffusion currents at dropping mercury electrodes. We see that the parameters on the right-hand side of equation H10 involve N, the number of Faradays per mole involved in the electrode reaction, D, the diffusion coefficient of the diffusing reactant, CB, the bulk concentration of the species being reduced, M, the rate of flow of mercury out of the capillary, and T, the time. H10 is the Ilkovich equation written for instantaneous currents, the current at any time during drop life. Equation H11 is the corresponding equation for the average current, the average value of the current that passes during the lifetime of an individual drop. The average current is often what is recorded on commercially available polarographs because of electronic damping that is often present in the current measuring circuits. But whether the instantaneous or the average current is measured, the Ilkovich equation is used to relate the measured current to the bulk concentration of the substance being determined. Direct quantitative analysis by means of polarography was one of its earliest and most useful applications. It is still widely utilized for that purpose, and a variety of simple procedures have been worked out. One method depends upon the fact that, according to the Ilkovich equation, one can define a so-called diffusion current constant, capital I, which depends only on the properties of the reactant and is independent of the characteristics of the particular capillary used in constructing the dropping electrode. Equation H12 defines the diffusion current constant, and H13 shows how it can be used to evaluate concentrations of reactants. The diffusion current, mercury flow rate, and drop time are measured. The diffusion current constant is looked up in tabulations, or is measured with a solution having a known concentration of the reactant, and then the concentration of a reactant in the unknown solution can be calculated from equation H13. This procedure is acceptable for relatively rough analysis, but not where higher accuracy is desired, because, as you might expect, diffusion current constants turn out in practice to be somewhat dependent on the supporting electrolyte compositions and the concentration of the reactant, so that no single value of capital I will be suitable for use in all of the diverse media in which analysis may be desired. For this reason, it is more common for standard addition or calibration curve techniques to be employed. Figure H14 shows how an analysis by means of standard addition might proceed. The polarogram, shown without its current fluctuations, for the solution of the unknown is recorded in a previously measured volume of whatever supporting electrolyte proves analytically useful, along with the residual current curve for the same electrolyte, shown dashed in figure H14. The diffusion current for this unknown solution is measured as shown in the figure. Next, a measured volume of a standard solution of the species being analyzed is added to the unknown solution, a second polarogram recorded, and the new, larger diffusion current measured as shown in figure H14. These two current measurements, plus the known solution volumes and the concentration of the added standard solution, can then be combined to evaluate the original concentration of the unknown solution. The exact relationship is given in equation 815. It turns out that the best precision and accuracy are obtained with the standard addition method when the aliquot of standard solution added results in an increase in the diffusion current of about twofold, and it is common operating procedure to perform analysis by standard addition in this way. A third method that is quite commonly used when the analysis of many samples is required in essentially the same supporting electrolytes is the preparation of a standard calibration curve, such as the one shown in figure H16 for copper ion. Such calibration curves are only rigorously applicable to the particular supporting electrolyte and dropping electrode capillaries used during their construction. But once constructed, they provide a convenient, reliable, and rapid means for quantitative analysis. Either the standard addition or calibration curve method are capable of yielding analytical accuracy of 1 to 2% with care, and even the absolute method, using tabulated diffusion current constants, can usually be trusted to ±10%. The curve in figure H16 is restricted to about the lowest concentration range in which conventional polarography proves to be analytically useful. You'll note that the calibration line does not pass through the origin, the reason being that at concentrations below about 10 micromolar, it becomes increasingly difficult to distinguish clearly between the small diffusion currents and the persistent residual current, which does not diminish in magnitude as the concentration of the substance being determined declines. For example, figure H17 compares polarograms for 5 micromolar and 100 micromolar copper II. With the 5 micromolar solution, the necessary correction for the residual current is clearly so large that it becomes very difficult to determine the actual value of the diffusion current with any precision. It is these irreducible residual currents that set the ultimate limit on the analytical sensitivity of polarography, rather than any instrumental limitation on the accurate measurement of small currents. For example, if the typical values of the parameters involved in the Ilkovich equation shown above equation H18 are used to calculate limiting currents, values of 5 to 10 microamps for each millimole per liter of reactant present in the solution are obtained. In table H19, you see how the magnitude of the limiting currents change as the concentration is decreased. 8.9 microamperes for a 1 millimolar solution, 8.9 nanoamperes for a 1 micromolar solution, and 8.9 picoamperes for a 10 to the minus 6th millimolar or 10 to the minus 9th molar solution. Currents as small as nanoamperes and even picoamperes are measurable with modern electronic instrumentation, so that if the only factor limiting the sensitivity of the polarographic method were the factors involved in arriving at table H19, the polarographic method would be usable at much lower concentration than is in fact possible. Two factors are responsible for the magnitude of the residual current which pose the limit on the analytical sensitivity of polarography. The first of these is the presence of the double-layer capacitance at the electrode-electrolyte interface, as we discussed before in the section on linear potential scan voltammetry. The existence of this capacitance at the dropping mercury electrode means that as the area of each drop increases, its total capacity increases, and an additional current, the so-called charging current, must be supplied to the electrode to provide the additional charge required by the increasing capacitance. This aspect of the electrode's behavior is expressed quantitatively in equation H20. The magnitude of the charging current, I sub C, is given by the product of the specific double-layer capacitance, CDL, that is the capacitance per square centimeter of the electrode-electrolyte interface, times the rate of change of the electrode's area, dAdt, times the term involving the difference between two potentials, E and E sub Z. E is the potential of the electrode at any point, and E sub Z is that particular potential of the electrode at which there is no charging current, the so-called potential of zero charge. It turns out that at one particular value of the potential of the mercury electrode, the net electric charge on the surface of the mercury is precisely zero, and therefore no charge is required in order to increase the electrode area at that potential. At all other potentials, a charging current must pass as the electrode area grows, and its magnitude is larger, the bigger is the difference between the potential of the electrode and the zero charge potential. The E minus EZ term in equation H20 accounts for this fact. If we choose the typical values listed under equation H20 for the parameters appearing on the right-hand side of H20 to see how large the charging current can be in a typical polarographic experiment, we obtain the results summarized in H21. The potential of zero charge, E sub Z, for mercury lies in the vicinity of minus half a volt versus the saturated Kalman electrode, so the value of 0.7 volts for the E minus EZ term means that the electrode potential would be either plus 2/10 or minus 1.2 volts versus the saturated Kalman electrode. Many polarographic waves appear within this potential range, so that the calculation involved in obtaining the currents shown in H21 represents a realistic case in terms of charging current contributions. Charging currents, which decrease from 0.13 to 0.08 microamps during the life of the drop, are calculated. And if we compare the magnitude of this current with those listed previously in Table H19, we see that the charging current would become larger than the total diffusion current due to the reduction of the reactant itself at concentrations of the reactant much below about 10 to the minus 2 millimolar. A second, less severe but nevertheless always present limit on the sensitivity of the polarographic method arises from reducible impurities, which are inevitably present to some extent in solutions being examined polarographically. These impurities contribute to the total current and can become the chief component of the non-capacitive current in very dilute solutions of a reactant. One of the most common of these impurities is oxygen. Oxygen begins to be reduced at about 0 volts versus the saturated Kalman electrode at the dropping electrode, and it is reduced at a diffusion-limited rate at all potentials more negative than that. So it is necessary to remove oxygen from solutions before recording polarograms in order to eliminate this extraneous source of current. Table H22 indicates the magnitude of the current that oxygen can contribute. In air-saturated water at 25 degrees centigrade, the concentration of oxygen is about 1/4 millimolar. At potentials where its reduction proceeds all the way to water, it is a 4-electron reduction, and the diffusion current resulting from that process amounts to about 5 microamperes. If the oxygen is removed from the solution, for example, by bubbling an inert gas through the solution, the oxygen concentration can be reduced below 1 micromolar in a few minutes. In these solutions, the residual oxygen produces currents of only a few hundredths microampere, which means that the contribution of oxygen to the total current can be made very small. But even with relatively efficient deoxygenation of the solution, the remaining oxygen, which is much more difficult to remove, gives rise to residual reduction currents, which are larger than the currents which would result from the intentional addition of a reducible reactant at concentrations in the range of 10 to the minus 2 to 10 to the minus 3 millimolar. So these two factors, the capacitative charging current and the residual reducible impurities present, impose the limits on the analytical sensitivity of classical polarography, which make it unsuitable for the determination of reactants at concentrations much lower than a few hundredths millimolar. Various methods have been devised to improve the analytical sensitivity of the polarographic method, and one of the most successful of these has been the technique of pulse polarography, which we will take up in the next section. But first, let's consider a few additional features of classical polarograms.
Please turn to Side 8 for the continuation of this ACS audio course.